When the holiday is over and all the packages have been unwrapped and you're lying in a pile of tattered wrappings and empty booze bottles and what used to be a fruitcake, you will realize that what you really wanted for Geekmas was more Blu-rays! The
Hooray!
only regret you have throughout the holidays was that you didn't buy more Blu-rays and DVDs on our suggestions!
Not everybody can be like us, who have actually made a tunnel between our homes of the Blu-rays and DVDs that we didn't even want.
Yeah,
much
it was
less
fun.
The ones we kept.
Yeah, it's like a fort. It's really
yeah,
cool.
It's totally awesome. I'm not, you, and no, you cannot see it.
No. You have to know the password.
Mine.
The password is taco. No, it's not that. Shh! Don't tell them. Don't tell them what the password
now
is.
Now we have to change the password.
Damn it. Anywho. Well, this is All I Want for Geekmas. This is the final installment because it is, I mean, Christmas is like a couple days away. I mean, at this point.
Yeah. At this point, this is pretty much like you spending your Amazon gift cards on yourself.
There you go. Yeah. Now we're just giving you ideas for what to spend on yourself because we're okay with you being a little selfish during the holidays.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that point where you're the nicest person in the world with, like, buying presents for your loved ones and friends up until Christmas Day when you're like, ah, you're
mine,
a crazed
mine.
Animal. Mine, bitch, mine.
It's good to know we never grow out of that.
No.
But I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And this is sort of our geek gift guide offshoot of Digital Noise, so we are breaking down by category, some of the best Blu-rays and DVDs that we've reviewed throughout 2013. And on this show, we're going to talk about TV and animation.
Yes, we are. And there's, of course, a lot of stuff to talk about here because, as you've heard us say a number of times in the past, it's gotten to the point that television in some ways is supplanting films as our favorite visual art form.
True story.
Outside of pornography, of course.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's highly stimulating visual art form.
Yeah. And watching my cat play with a piece of string on the floor.
Also highly stimulating.
Yeah, also pretty stimulating. but now, don't forget, now you're going to see on the front page here on the site a lot of pictures of all the titles that we're covering here today. And all of those, not only do they have a time code, so if you just want to hear specifically that thing, you can skip right to it. But if you click on that image, it'll bring you to an Amazon page. Now, it's not even just about buying that thing in particular, although if you're going to do that based on our advice, I'm flattered.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
But
why are we talking like newsies?
I don't know. I thought I was talking like the Nutty Professor. I'm flatter. Flattered. Anything that you buy by going through that link is going to send us a little tiny bit of a kickback. So, and I gotta tell you, it has made a difference, you guys doing this, telling your friends, telling them to buy their birthday presents, their Christmas presents through our Amazon links. So helpful.
Very much appreciated. And continue to do that. We would, you know, that's keeping the lights on and keeping us able to continue to deliver this content. And there's only more in store. As much as I thought we had done all that we possibly could in terms of content, it looks like there's even more coming, so.
I can't believe I have anything left to say.
Yeah.
But apparently I do. So.
Well, we're gonna,
sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. We're going to go ahead and start this off with our TV section. And just for shits and giggles, I'm going to go first.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. We're going to start with American TV. And my first pick is going to be Mad Men Season 6.
Such a girl.
Yeah, I love the shit out of Mad Men. And Mad Men
Ew.
Season... I do. It's disgusting how much shit I love out of Mad Men. Mad Men Season 6 is really just a fascinating segment of this story, a fascinating time in television to be observing this. It's not quite as consistently jaw-dropping as Season 5 was, but it's still a phenomenal piece of television. And what I like most about Season 6 is sort of this... It continues to, like even down to the artwork on the cover for Mad Men Season 6.
Oh, such a great cover.
It really is, and it seems to be playing up this idea, and I could be, again, I could be totally wrong, but this theory that I have about how the show is going to end seems to be supported not only by things that happened within the sixth season, but by the very nature of the artwork itself. And if you have a moment to go back, I think it was like episode, I want to say 19 or 20 of Digital Noise, where Grant and I talk about Mad Men Season 6, and I kind of went a little overboard, like almost conspiracy theory nut-ist, just like breaking down all these little references and all these things.
You're
that I
end
think,
up the same way I did when watching Lost. You're like, oh, I know how it's going to end,
and then
it's going to end wrong. Like a totally different way, and you'll be like, fuck that show.
But yeah, just a lot of really great things going on. I don't want to say too much about it because, of course, what we love about Mad Men is just seeing, because Don Draper is such an unpredictable character. That's what we love about him. We never know in a given situation how he's going to react, because he seems like such a stuffed shirt executive, and yet he's got this really mysterious past, and he's, you know, you never know whether he's going to do the thing that makes sense, you know, in logical business sense, or he's going to do something that is entirely selfish, that is spectacular to watch. And I think that what's made going back to season six so rewarding is that I revisited it. I ran all the way through it after Breaking Bad finished, and I realized that Mad Men really does sort of fill in a gap that is now going to be left by Breaking Bad, because we have another show about a guy who's leading a double life and doing everything he can not to get caught, and we're just waiting for the turnabout. We're waiting for that moment when the sword of Damocles hanging above Don Draper falls and his other life comes out.
Yeah, so. When we, you know, all these peccadilloes that he's been involved in, all these things from his past, terrible mistakes he's made, and his inability to really seemingly feel any sort of remorse for them is going to punish him. It has to. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely check this out. Great cinematography as always. Great performances as always. Season 6 of Mad Men. If you're already watching Mad Men, then I don't even need to sell you on this. Just go buy it.
This also comes with a couple extra features. There's an interactive gallery called Summer of Love, because this is between 1967 and 68. So we're getting right there. Mm-hmm. Summer of Love. Indeed. Should be into it. We've already seen a character take LSD, so.
That's a true story.
As well as a 30-minute featurette called Turn On, Tune In, Drop Out, once again, about drugs. It's funny that there's an introductory warning saying Lionsgate Entertainment, AMC, Mad Men, and their affiliates or associates do not advocate the use of illegal drugs. That being said, woo, drugs!
Neither do we, for the record.
And then there's about a half-hour look at the series, of course, world-famous production design. Probably the thing the show's most lauded for anything else. So high quality, so.
Definitely.
There you go. Well, you know what? For my pick, I'm going to surprise absolutely no one by choosing Star Trek The Next Generation, which didn't put out just one, not just two.
I am not at all surprised.
But three Blu-ray seasons this year, going from season 3, season 4, and season 5 all came out this year in just a fantastically fixed up version where they've, you know, when they redid the original Star Trek, they actually had to replace some effects altogether because they were so terrible looking.
Yeah.
With this, the problem was that even though the show was shot on film, the effects were shot on video, and the effects reels had just disintegrated. They didn't even exist anymore. So they had to redo all the, visual effects pretty much, including phaser shots and everything like that. And it's probably a good thing they did because the CG is just a fuckload better now these days. Everything really looks great in here. It sounds amazing. Just 7.1 master audio. There you go. So when you get that part at the end of the opening credits scene where it goes, and goes into warp, that shit goes all the way around your living room and back into your stomach, yo.
Gotta love that.
I'm just saying. Whereas all these seasons, probably Star Trek season 3 is probably, if I'm not mistaken, is the one that's the best one. Hold on. Yes. Which has got like Yesterday's Enterprise and ends with The Best of Both Worlds, which is the famous Borg two-parter. But all three of these are absolutely fantastic with lots of good extra features and commentaries. I mean, I love this show. It is my favorite of the Star Trek shows because it was the one that I kind of bonded with my parents over watching every week, and then later bonded with a bunch of other friends with watching. I still remember with my group of Austin friends that I had made, like relatively new friends, all of us gathering in my living room to watch the final episode of Star Trek Next Generation and being all teary-eyed. So many fond memories. Captain Picard, Data, Worf, I guess Troy. We miss you guys.
Nice.
God, she's irritating. I'll say that right out. It's like there's one character that in rewatching these, you're like, what in the fuck was there a ship's counselor for as a major character? Notice that none of the other shows followed in this tradition. Oh, nice. Well. But yeah, really, really great sets. There's so much care in these, and yeah, can't recommend them anymore. But back to you, Brian.
Well, I gotta, you know, my own proclivities in this matter would drift toward gangsterism. And
is that a thing?
Yes. More specifically, the gangsterism of the Prohibition era, like classic gangster stuff. And therefore, I have fallen all kinds of in love with Boardwalk Empire from
HBO.
HBO, yes, thank you. But the third season is okay, let me just put it to you. If you're not entirely on board with Boardwalk Empire because you thought it was going to be a little bit more action-packed, a little bit more severe, the third season has a body count that is almost immeasurable. Like, the third season is not taking any prisoners, and I absolutely love that about the show. They are maintaining Nucky Thompson's character, played by Steve Buscemi, and played with so many different layers. Like, just when you think Nucky is sort of this pushover of a guy who is like, who wants political power, but is sort of wormy, too wormy to be a real force to be reckoned with. The third season comes along, and holy shit. Like, I was so blown away by what they did in this particular season and the conflicts that come up and, like, the pretenders to Nookie's throne that rise and fall. And it is gang war to the nth degree. It is, you know, if you had a classic Warner Brothers gangster film and then Quentin Tarantino got involved, it's, you know, it's that kind of a body count. It's fucking amazing. And all throughout the show, they maintain the beauty of the production design and, like, recreating 1920s era Atlantic City, and I love everything about this show, but the third season is everything I love about the show pushed to the absolute limits, and I dig that about it.
Yeah, so many people have told me the same thing who already were in love with the show, and I've only seen the first two seasons. I have the third season, I haven't found time to watch it yet, but everyone I know is like, oh yeah, the third season is where that show, I mean, that hits its peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, and I'm so excited to see. I haven't been keeping up with the fourth season because we've been running this website.
Yeah, I'm a little busy.
But I definitely want to see where it's gone from here, because it ends on such a... Man, the note that this season ends on is just like, yes, bring me more! Like, I can't wait!
Now, this comes with six episode commentaries for six of the episodes here, obviously. 30-minute look with two of the directors that break down key scenes from episodes. 62 minutes of newsreels, or rather 24 exclusive featurettes that look into the historical figures, events, cultural elements, and notable upheavals that inspired every episode of the third season.
That's awesome.
Martin Scorsese, who's the executive producer, reflects on season three. There's a special feature on the new characters that introduced this season. A quick series of text-based history lessons that look at the real gangsters of the Roaring Twenties.
Which I'm such a nerd for. I am such a nerd for mafia history.
The interactive feature for every episode that allows you to track the heavy, quote, heavy hitters and hotspots, whatever the hell that is.
I thought that was a place where your Wi-Fi works best. Yeah,
and then a 14-minute recap of the whole season of season two. So if you've been away for a while, took a long break, you can watch that, get you caught up to speed. I wish every television series on their box sets would do this.
Yeah.
I do not understand why they... I mean, it should be a law to have like that, like a previously on,
well,
as a special feature.
No, I agree with you, but then again, not everybody watches things the way we do, where it's like we have to cram in so much, and it's like,
true.
Since I watched this last season, I've watched 378 other things.
True. Well, one of the things I was actually that I do keep up with, despite that being so busy, is an American Horror Story. I am just the hugest fan of this completely silly and over-the-top horror series that tries to throw in everything, including the kitchen sink, into every season, which is one of the joys of it, really. It's just every episode, there's so little downtime. You know, really, it's just like, scary thing, scary thing, scary thing. Pause. Scary thing, scary thing, scary thing, scary thing. Pause. Scary thing, scary thing. And it is, I mean, it's every kind of scary thing. It's every type of horror thing. It's like so much stuff by all rules that we know of, it should not work at all. And yet, 17 primetime Emmy nominations last year for this season.
Gotta give it up.
It's a lot of fun, and a good deal of that credit has to go to Jessica Lange, who's become the diva of this show, the Grand Madame, who's
no doubt
one of she's always one of the big stars on every season being a completely separate story, having nothing to do with the previous season. This one took place in 1964 at the Briarcliff Mental Institution, following all the stories of the patients, doctors, and nuns in Occupy It, that involves everything from crazed Nazi scientists to sadistic nuns to alien abduction to like mutated human monsters.
You name it, we've put it in the show.
Satanic possession. Like, I mean, oh my God, it's all over the place and it's so much fun. Jesus Christ. If I have one complaint at all, it's that it kind of ends four episodes before it ends. You're like, wow, that was kind of the ending of the show, wasn't it? And it's, no, we still have some more stuff to do. And sadly, you have one of those, like, okay, the rest of the episodes feel kind of like an epilogue more than they do, like, the appropriate ending.
But right, right.
They're not bad. This just feels a little mismanaged in far of timing. But, man, just there's just episode after episode near that you'll be like, no way, with stuff they do. And that's generally true for all the seasons, but this one in particular here, I'd say. There's a few special features about some deleted scenes. There's a silly short thing about 9 minutes long about where an orderly is being interviewed by an unseen woman that leads to the serial killer Bloody Face getting involved. There's a 21-minute compendium of interviews of about the season. There's a look at the series production design, which is badass. I mean, this is all this great 60s gothic, so cool. And there's a look at the people who do the makeup and prosthetic effects for the creatures in this. Altogether, totally solid package. The type of thing you will definitely go back and rewatch. No question. Highly recommended.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, it may sound a little too cheesy the way they throw everything at the wall, but it's so much fun to watch.
It's one of those you've got to get past your initial, what the fuck are they doing? Like, because there's no other horror that's really like this.
No.
It's a completely different attempt to do horror than I've ever seen anybody do. And strangely enough, once you get into the sort of like the feel of it, once you start like going, okay, I see what you did there, it starts to work on you until it's your favorite soap opera.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, my next pick has got to be Game of Thrones Season 2.
Well, of course.
Because I
had to.
I'm a little unsure. Okay, so here's what you got to understand about the way that Game of Thrones works in terms of releasing, and this is not something that a lot of shows do. They wait until the new show is out to release the previous season.
I'm not sure why they do that.
They wait longer than any other TV show I've ever seen. So in other words, you don't get the Blu-ray of Season 2 until the premiere of Season 3.
Yeah, you'd think you'd put it out like maybe a month before. So people are like, oh, I'm going to rewatch it now.
Yeah, but this is just like, you know, at almost simultaneously. And even then, even a month before would be a long time. But they wait until pretty much the day of. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you're probably thinking, wait a minute, isn't Season 3 been off the air for a while? Yes, it has. But Season 2 came out, you know, right about the same time that season started on TV.
February 19th.
Yeah. So you can understand how, like, so this was released in February of this year, even though, you know, Season 3 has been long since finished. Anywho, Season 2 is really where a lot of things start. It really starts to build, like, I think the first event in the show that kind of has been a benchmark as far as the tone and the overall, like, really emotionally taxing aspect of the series was, of course, spoiler alert, was the killing of Ned Stark.
Sure.
Like, that was, like, first benchmark. It's like, okay, I think I understand now that this show is going to be pretty bleak. And then this season has like 14 more of those benchmarks.
Yeah, it's a reason you've seen all these things on TV about on the internet about how George R. R. Martin likes to kill off characters. Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
and no one is safe.
No one. There's an episode in this where they barbecue children, for fuck's sake. Like, it is wow. But there's a lot about this season too that's like, you know, this is the season that introduces us to Brienne of Tarth,
who's wonderful.
Who I think is one of the best characters on the show.
Yeah.
You know, just like this towering female warrior who does not put up with anyone's shit.
You never believe it, but in real life she's actually really good looking. Because on the show they make her look like it's hard to tell if she's a woman or a man. She's just this big hulking brute of a woman who looks completely unattractive in every way.
Very androgynous.
And in real life it's like, oh wow, she's actually really good looking.
Huh.
Yeah.
Never would have thought that. Yeah. But this is also where a lot of the season started off looking really bad for the Lannisters, and we all got really excited, and then just one thing after another.
Yeah, we've seen fortunes rise and fade. People go from the top of the heap to the very, very bottom.
We just can't seem to get the people at the top of the heap off the goddamn top of the heap, even though, you know, in terms of their character, they are the bottom feeders, but they're at the top of the fucking heap. Damn you, Lannisters!
One of the things I love the best most about the show, and even more so in the third season, but the way we see heroes who act villainous and villains who start to become completely sympathetic despite the heinous stuff we've already seen them do.
And this is by far, from what we've seen, Tyrion Lannister's best season, Peter Dinklage. Yeah. He, you know, when he's actually out there on the battlefield and kicking ass, like, the way we wouldn't expect, and turns out to be an incredible military strategist as well, like, that was great. I thought that was such a nice, little turn for his character. And the episode Blackwater, which was directed by, what is his name? The guy that did Centurion and The Descent, Neil Marshall. Blackwater, directed by Neil Marshall, is one of the show's very best episodes. Yeah. That has an epic sea battle.
It's a Hollywood quality, yes, like whole episode of like a castle being assaulted from sea.
Yeah.
Like just two armies going at it. That's wow. Amazing.
Yeah. I absolutely loved it. And then I believe on here, they in the special features, they talk about how they made that. And when you see what they were actually working with for that.
Yeah.
Whoever is doing the digital effects on the show needs to be given more work. Needs to be given all the fucking work. Because when you actually see what they were working with, it's like, wait, that was it? That's all there was? And then on the other hand, it's like, they actually built a fucking ship. They built like from top to bottom. Yep. Like, okay, and here's where this is where the under the bow area, the storage, we need to put that in there. It's like, it's a prop and you're building it as if it needs to be seaworthy. It's just, it blows your mind, and I think this is just for so many reasons, for the quality of the show, for the quality of the performances, for the how amazing the show looks in Blu-ray, and just the special features that really do break down your favorite parts of the show. I think this is just a phenomenal release all around.
Yeah, HBO has made no mistake of trying to make this where the fans are going to love it, and there's even, you know, alternate versions you can get of it with, like, statues and shit like that that come with it if you want to spend a bunch and more money.
There are Easter eggs.
Yes, there are.
Very few DVDs, very few Blu-rays still do Easter eggs.
Dragon eggs.
And they're called dragon eggs. I love that.
Yeah, lots of bonus features on here. Lots of intensive featurettes and looking behind the scenes, like in-character bios, on-screen guide interfaces, which are nice for a show like this where you're like, wait, who is that guy?
Yeah. Helpful.
I mean, this is one of those rare shows that's just as popular with audiences as it is with critics. Mm-hmm. HBO knows it. And they're even Funny or Die apparently did an episode before the season started called Sunday is Coming, which was just following like all these ridiculously, dangerously excited Game of Thrones fans waiting for the new season to start.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, it seems appropriate. Well, one of the shows I'm going to be that excited about before it starts in, I want to say it's February, I can't remember for sure, is Hannibal.
Yes.
With one of the strongest debuts of any new TV series in a long time. I'm going to chalk that up to really, on the whole, two people. One is showrunner Brian Fuller, who
so
is,
good.
For years has been one of my favorite guys working in the industry. He's kind of, a lot of people even call him the new Joss Whedon, even though his style doesn't resemble Whedon's at all. It's just that he works on these quirky little shows that the networks never have confidence in, that gain a cult following, and he gets given another show after the network goes, wow, we really fucked up canceling that. Okay, well, let's give him another shot. Somebody doesn't get it, cancels it, rinse and repeat. Wonderfalls, Dead Like Me, Pushing Daisies, such a fantastic creator. And Hannibal, for me, trumps them all so far as a totally different type of show. Based, of course, it's a prequel to a prequel to Red Dragon, the novel by Thomas Harris, featuring Hannibal Lecter. The other reason this works so well is the actor they got to play Hannibal Lecter for it, Mads Mikkelsen, who chooses a completely different route to play this character as Anthony Hopkins or Brian Cox, who played it in Manhunter.
Yeah.
This is a wonderful series focusing on the character Will Graham, who's played by Ed Norton more recently in the Brett Ratner directed Red Dragon. Where it's really showing him as being a guy who is so on the edge as to be easily kind of a psychotic himself. He's just a profiler who's so good, he verges on psychic. who goes into full blown, like, fugue states once he started to put all the facts together of like a killing scene, like of just sort of putting it all together that are truly terrifying for both him and at points for the viewer as well. It doesn't hurt either that the actual murder scenes they come up with, the murderer's ways of doing things are some of the most twisted and demented shit I've ever seen in any movie or television show.
No doubt.
Some truly nasty stuff. Stuff you're like, how is NBC making the show? Well, I have a feeling they know they've got a hit in the making. Not everybody was confident enough. I mean, come on, it's a show based on Hannibal Lecter. Everyone's like, come on, that's going to suck. It decidedly doesn't. Lawrence Fishburne plays Jack Crawford, head of behavioral sciences at the FBI, who of course was played by Scott Glenn, famously in Silence of the Lambs. You also have weird little appearances by characters who appear we're going to see a lot more of, especially Gillian Anderson, who plays Hannibal Lecter's own psychotherapist, and in her own way is almost as creepy as he is.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the standouts about the show is the way, like, as much as Anthony Hopkins made you terrified of Hannibal, but yet still kind of admire him, Mads Mikkelsen does the same thing, but in a completely different route to get you there. Yeah. He is cold. He is calculating. But he's a perfectionist and a gourmet and a totally non-snobby and a sort of like, I'd want to share this with people sort of way. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, at every second, the worst thing he has to deal with in his life is that urge to tell people when he's feeding them these huge, like 8-course meals he prepares for them. You're eating people!
It's people! This delicious food is people!
This is such a good show. It really is. It's genuinely scary. It's genuinely appealing. It's got one hell of a cliffhanger that leads up to, so thank God they renewed it.
And some of the most beautifully grotesque cinematography. Like, even when it's dealing with the most sort of vile of subjects, it photographs it so lovingly. Like, I dig that about the show.
And lots of really cool bonus features on here as well. One of my favorites on here is one that takes a look at how they designed the food stuff for this. Like, the way that they were like, okay, it's called A Taste for Killing. And it's like, okay, obviously it was very important for him to be such a gourmet that we create stuff that both looks really incredibly delicious and amazingly set up, but that also looks like it could easily be human meat as well. Like, you could picture someone in your head, you're like, oh shit. So yeah. You're like, you're torn between this disgust and appeal that really worked really well. They didn't even have to tell me that. I was like, yeah, you did a good job on that.
One of my favorite scenes in the show so far was the scene in which Hannibal Lecter simultaneously pulls out his recipe index and his Rolodex.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Just look through both to, like, compare and contrast and find the perfect match.
It was just like, oh, my God. It's so subtle, but so well done.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff on here. They make it well worth your time to own this. And I know I'm going to watch this again before they start airing the new season.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Really, really recommended.
Without a doubt. I actually want to – I mean, we've talked about some pretty severe stuff so far. Gangsters and fantasy worlds where everyone dies and Hannibal Lecter. Steer it toward comedy for a moment and talk about New Girl season 2, which has become one of my new favorite shows. And I did, again, not something I expected to happen. I mean, I like Zooey Deschanel just fine, but she always kind of struck me, you know, post Elf, I always kind of saw her as like this cutesy,
little
pixie.
Too precious.
A little too precious, absolutely. But I really dig the hell out of New Girl. I think New Girl is one of those shows that kind of what we were talking about with like the Mindy Kaling project about what that show was trying to do. I feel like the New Girl does a little bit better, and it's just, it's, you know, Zooey Deschanel plays a girl named Jess who's a teacher, is very quirky, and is living in a house with three other guys, with three guys. She's not a guy. Yeah, she's living in a house with three guys. I don't know why.
That's the big twist at the end of season 2. Yeah. I got a dick!
It's called The Crying Girl. But yeah, it's... No, it's...
That was the episode called Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's just a really funny show that it's all about sort of the way that... And the way people interact when they live together is very interesting. You know, whether you're friends or whether you just met the person, like, through Craigslist, like, there's just it's awkward. It's so awkward to live with somebody sometimes. And she's an adorable, adorable human being. Like, call her precious. She might be a little too precious, but the way that she brings this character to life, I just can't help but fall in love with her. And I think that it's rounded out nicely by, the people she lived with, like, Schmidt, first of all, I think is a great character, Barney Stinson type character.
Sure.
And then you have Nick, who's played by
Jake Johnson.
Yeah, Jake Johnson.
Who for me is the standout of the show.
He's so good. He's such a regular schlub, and yet his particular brand of neuroses is so hysterical without seeming like constructed just for the sake of laughs. Like, you could actually picture someone having some of these like weird little tics, you know?
He's got this self-aware delivery style that's not smarmy about it at all. It's just like, it's more like, I know I'm a douche and I really don't want to be a douche, but I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to laugh at myself and admit to you now, I'm going to warn you ahead of time, I can act like a real jerk.
And one of the other great things about this particular season is that standout cameos from a number of people that you recognize. Not the least of which is Dennis Farina in what is unfortunately one of his last roles as Nick's dad. And then, oddly enough, they filmed an episode where Nick's dad passes away, but they filmed it while Dennis Farina was still alive.
So how weird.
It's kind of odd, right?
New Girl killed Dennis Farina.
See, it was all their fault.
They were going for excellence.
And, and I do love the episode, too, with... I believe it's in this season with Rob Reiner and Jamie Lee Curtis as Jess's parents.
Yeah.
It's just such a cool dynamic. And they were just, They were at each other's throats the whole time, and it's just they play off each other really well. And I don't know. I think overall, it's a far better season than the first, even though I don't think the first season was bad.
No.
I just think that this is a show that continues to grow and continues to evolve.
They put it together a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
They've watched these characters' interactions have become a little bit more interesting and endearing even.
Indeed.
As well as they've attracted a higher quality of people for their cameos because the first season was such a hit. I mean, like as well, I was going to say, Lizzie Kaplan, who I just love to pieces, has a role for four episodes as Nick's ex-girlfriend. Justin Long, who's also awesome, is in here for four episodes, who dates Jess for a while. Olivia Munn is really fun, who's a stripper who dates Nick, who's so neurotic he can't deal with the fact she's a stripper, which, well, to be fair, you don't have to be that neurotic to have troubles with dating a stripper. I can tell you that from personal experience. Carla Gugino, who has a relationship with Schmidt that's one of the funniest relationships in this entire show
it
and
really
most terrifying. Just, yeah, there's lots of good stuff in this whole show. And I thought it kind of, that if there's a misstep here, it's towards the end of the season, they got a little bit too close to ending up with everybody hooking up with each other. And that's always a mistake this early in a sitcom.
Yeah, the will they won't they needs to not be settled for everybody so quickly. But I think they're rebounding from that pretty well.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I'm going to go right back into something incredibly disturbing, if you don't mind.
Sure, go for it.
You know where my tastes lay, and yep. I'm going to go with Showtime's Banshee. A show came out of nowhere, didn't know what it was, had a cool cover, said, let's put it in. Wow. Oh, I'm sorry, not even Showtime, Cinemax, so you know you're in for some quality here.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. This is not what you'd call high-quality television
nope.
in terms of art. This is what you call high-quality television in terms of, like, man, they fucked some shit up.
Yeah. High, high entertainment value.
It takes place in the fictional town of Banshee, Pennsylvania, which features a guy who was a ex-gangster and thief. Who travels to the town of Banshee, played by, Anthony Starr, Lucas Hood is the character's name, who ends up in a position where he finds that he can assume the identity of the sheriff of this town. After, you know, the new sheriff was showing up, dies, he and the restaurant owner at that place are the only people who know that this happened. So he goes, oh, well, fuck it. I'm going to take his car and his ID and I'm going to be him. Because his ex-lover is living in that town, Anastasia, and is now married to, she's married and has kids who don't know about his past. They're both hiding from her father, Mr. Rabbit, who's a totally evil Ukrainian gangster, played by, who was it who played that role? Somebody awesome. Ben Cross, who's amazing in it. But this is just one of those shows that's just fun.
Yeah.
Like, just ridiculous amounts of violence. And like, the main character is such an anti-hero that like, while you root for him, he'll always turn around and do something despicable.
Every once in a while,
you're like, I kind of even like him more for that because the whole tone of the show is just so, just silly fun.
This should give you an overall view of what the show is all about. Your favorite character is likely to be the transsexual computer hacker named Job.
Yeah. He is pretty awesome.
He's fucking incredible.
Played by Hoon Lee. but there's so many good characters in here. Frankie Faison is a retired former boxer and ex-con who's sort of like, who now owns the bar restaurant where he's the only other person who really knows who Lucas Hood is. Who's like, they kind of keeping the secret together and even helping each other out at first. It's just fun and it has some really, I mean, just flat out, no other way to say it, Hollywood blockbuster special effects sequences in it that will make your jaw drop that this is television.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, the opening, I mean, like, the pilot episode has a bus crash that's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, the guy's running from a full-size bus that's, like, turning around at full speed, coming at him, and you're just like, that was not just CG.
Yeah.
That was practical work. Holy shit. Lots of good stuff here, lots of fun, but you gotta watch it a little tongue-in-cheek. Every episode has an interactive feature that allow you to explore clues and elements within the title sequence, strangely. And not the most fun thing in the world to do because it takes forever, but still, there's a bigger mystery being built here, and that they're slowly giving you pieces of what this bigger mystery is. Six commentaries, 34-minute collection of live-action prequel videos. I love it when they do stuff like this. So there's like literally almost an entire another episode that give you more pieces of all the characters' pasts in here. A comic book, digital comic book, and a bunch of little promos, really. A couple making of episode shorts, that sort of thing. So well worth your time if you like fun, action television.
Yeah.
For me, this is kind of like, in a weird sort of way, replacing the thing in my heart where Chuck once sat, the show Chuck, where it was like just really goofy, hard to take seriously action comedy. It's not the same type of show, really. Certainly not tonally, but it's that same, like, if I was even a slightly different person, I might hate this show. But as it is, I totally adore it.
Nice.
Fair enough.
Very cool. Well, this may be a dark horse on the list. This may be one that's a little controversial, but you know what? Fuck it. Community season 4. I'm putting it on the list because as much as people bitched about this season, and I definitely will grant you there are problems with it, I did not have nearly the amount of problems with it that I found a lot of people having. I really like this
season. People were so like, right, like 10 minutes into the first episode, people were already going, well, so much for this season. You're like going, what the fuck?
I'm really curious as to if they had never told anybody that Dan Harmon had been fired, I wonder if people would have had that same reaction.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there was a lot of just doubt going into the season, a lot of cynicism, like, well, without Dan Harmon, it's not the same show. And it's like, I will grant you there are episodes that are not as strong, but then there are episodes that I really thought were fantastic and deserved to be, you know, sat next to the paintball episodes and all the, like, other really great things that we latch onto as fans of this show. And, yeah, I think, for me, it really starts to get strong probably about the 5th episode, which is this Thanksgiving episode where they're all trying to avoid the actual Thanksgiving table, and it's like this weird sort of spin on the, no pun intended, but a spin on the bottle episode.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Herstory of Dance is just such a moving episode, and it's the kind of episode where we really get to the core of, like, as funny as these characters are and as much as they can represent sort of tropes and sort of archetypes of different sitcom characters, we really get to the heart of what makes us love these characters in Herstory of Dance, and especially Britta and Jeff. And I love the puppet episode. I know that was sort of like, people were like, what is this? And I'm like, I think it's fucking adorable, personally.
I love about this that it all ties up with a timelining back to the darkest timeline.
Yes.
With that whole, like, remember when there was the episode where they were talking about, where you saw the parallel universes they lived in?
Yep.
Assuming that's just them Abed shooting the shit. Well, they've kind of made that canon now, that universe actually exists and can even interact with this universe.
I love that.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see that.
Oh, and they're doing more in the pilot, apparently. So, like, it looked like the teaser for the pilot had darkest universe stuff.
Oh, for the 5th season?
For the 5th season.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And Heroic Origins is a lot of fun as well, because that goes back and kind of ties in all the characters, like where they started and how they all ended up at Greendale and how they're all kind of interconnected in each other's stories, and that's a lot of fun.
And how Chang, this was all part of his evil plot to destroy Greendale in the first place.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I had a blast with this season. I think overall it's a really solid season. There are a few missteps, I will grant you that, but I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as you've been hearing.
Yeah, it's still really funny. Is it as strong as the first 3 seasons? No, it's not, but it's got a lot of stuff that is up to that level. Certainly, if you're as big a fan as you say you were the first 3,
calling you
this
out,
is going to be more than enough stuff in there to keep you going. So if you've been keeping away from it because Dan Harmon wasn't involved, come on. They hired him back already. Get over it. Just watch the season.
Oh, my God. The episode where Troy and Abed think that they're in a buddy swap comedy.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny, but it doesn't get hilarious until Jim Rash thinks he switched bodies with Jeff. And his impression of what's the actor's name who plays Jeff that I'm blanking on?
Joel McHale.
Joel McHale. His impression of Joel McHale is so hysterical.
That guy's a really talented comedian, as well as writer.
Yes.
He wrote The Descendants, of all things. The movie with George Clooney. You're like, really? That guy wrote The Descendants?
Yeah.
And, oh God, what was the other movie?
So The Way, Way Back? Is that the other one he did?
I don't remember.
I think it was.
It was something this year.
No, I think it was The Way, Way Back. I almost.
Yes, it was The Way, Way Back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he did a great job with that one as well. I'm really impressed with Jim Rash, and I like that they gave him more to do this season.
Yeah, agreed. As well as made Chang considerably less obnoxious this season because he has Changnesia. So it was like, okay, so they had him act like a nice guy the whole season, which I'm like, I'll take him acting like anything over the completely obnoxious, this is the character I play in every movie I'm ever in character.
Agreed.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take a little bit. I'm going to take the show away from you for a minute.
What?
I am, because sadly you're
Fuck
not
this noise.
You're not on the list for the BBC.
No, it's cool. I'm American.
On the list for the BBC.
Not a commie turncoat like some people I know.
It's from England.
Yeah, that's right.
You know that's not a communist country, right?
I did not know that. Now I do.
I didn't think so. Do you want to rethink your insult and come up with something like limey or something?
I'll
like
think
that?
About it. You do your thing. I'll All think right, about
fair
it.
Fair enough. Well, I just got to talk about a couple titles because they belong on any best of the year list that came out from the BBC America's collection. One of which I just got to flat out say, all the special edition DVDs they've been putting out that have to go with Doctor Who have been like so much more than they had to do. Like one of those like, dudes, y'all are like shoving these full of brand new content and stuff you pulled out of your archives on like the, even the worst of episodes are packed with bonus features that are just like crazy cool for any serious Doctor Who fan. And there's just a lot of them. Not only do you get like the episodes in question that they're releasing separately like this, as well as putting out, Scream of the Shalka, which was an animated Doctor Who episode that was an experiment they were doing with Richard E. Grant playing the Doctor that to see if they wanted to continue Doctor Who after it had not existed for a couple of years in the form of an animation. It's actually a pretty damn good episode. Not only do you get that, not only do you get that these are re-released where they've got an animation team with sort of an Archer-like style doing it, who for the episodes that are missing in the middle of a run of stuff, some of the early stuff that's just missing segments of it, they've gotten that animation team to just do it because they still have the audio tracks. So you're like, oh, okay, well, that's, you feel like you're watching the whole thing. That fills it in pretty nicely. Not only do you have that, but you have the Doctor's Revisited sets, which have been coming out all year, which collects together just some of the best of, or at least most significant episodes for every single one of the Doctors who there's been so far. Just great. I mean, that's the box set you buy for somebody who doesn't know anything about Doctor Who and wants to know. You're like, here, watch each one, watch this set, and then you'll have a pretty good feel for across the universe of Doctor Who. Great stuff. Like I said, they went way beyond the call of duty on this one, way more than they had to do to make these great. Another thing they did that was terrific that's a re-release as well is their House of Cards. Now, a lot of people don't even realize that Netflix's House of Cards series with Kevin Spacey is a remake and a pretty loose one, really, on this original BBC series that started in the 1990 and was followed by two more seasons. For me, having watched the complete seasons of both, I'm going to go with the BBC one. The Netflix one is great. BBC One is better. It's faster moving. Everything pretty much gets wrapped up by the end of the first season with one of the biggest stand up and go, oh my God, moments on any TV show I've ever seen. Like, holy shit.
Nice.
I kept waiting for it to happen in the Netflix version. I was like, oh man. It's like, cause they knew they were going to keep going as a regular TV show. These are all based on books. So they all every season comes to a very climactic moment, and it's three whole seasons in one set of this fantastic show that's been listed on the 100 greatest British television programs amongst other lists, and won a bunch of awards. It's just so much fun watching this evil son of a bitch politician just manipulate everyone around him cruelly to get what he wants. Mm-hmm. And the best part is like, whereas the Netflix one, occasionally Kevin Spacey talks to the camera, this whole thing, I mean, he's Richard Attenborough of his evil world. He's walking around talking to you all the time going, I'm gonna totally fuck with this motherfucker. Not like that.
It's weird that he sounds
more
like
British and like somebody with a wig, but you know what I'm saying.
So he's a member of the Whig Party.
Yeah, but they're all kind of members of the Whig parties and what they wear on their heads anyway. What is with that? Anyway, you think there's a point you're like, you know what? Can we just stop doing this? This is kind of silly.
I don't know. I think about the point that you stop submitting people to the rack is the point where you also lose the powdered wig. I don't know.
But regardless, a terrific show. If you like the American version, give the British version a try. I think you're really going to like it. The third thing here that you just, even though it's not really, there's not a lot of extras on it, it's just such a good show. Out of the starting block, you have to see Orphan Black, which is a Canadian-British cross-production sci-fi show starring talk about like the breakout star on television this year for me is Tatiana Malsani, who plays the lead and like eight other characters in the show. Cause essentially this woman who's living a normal life till she finds out that, she was a clone, one of many clones, maybe a lot of clones. We don't even know yet.
Huh.
And that somebody is trying to kill all the clones now. Like, it's one by one killing off all these clones.
Weird.
So she's involved in this and starts forming relationships with some in a positive way, antagonistic relationships with others, having to assume the identities of others of them at times. At the same time, keeping this a secret from people because this whole thing, I mean, this is not the thing you would want to go blow up into the national news, really. Really fascinating, basically spy show, but with like strong science fiction elements with a performance by her. There's one scene where she's playing five characters in the same scene on screen together, like just interacting at a fast pace for a sizable amount of time. Like all who are distinctively different personalities and characters. Really good, very involving. It's one of those stick with it. You watch the first episode and go, this is all right, but where's it going? Stick with it. By the end, you'll be like shaking the DVD case going, there's got to be another disc in here. She's like pulling out the paper. God damn it. Maybe it's, hold on.
Not looking like a crack addict at all.
No, not at all. Anyway, that's the best of BBC TV for this year.
So I've got two options for you. I can either call you a Brit head or Brit for brains.
I will. Is there a third option?
No, there is not. Tommy was apparently the third option, and you poo-pooed that.
I'll take Brit for brains.
Brit for brains it is.
For the block. All right, well, it's time to get into animated television shows.
Hooray!
And since I just talked myself hoarse, why don't we let Brian start this one off?
Oh, goodness. Well, if I have to, I'll go ahead and say that my first pick is actually Robot Chicken Season 6.
Yay!
And this is a show that I've enjoyed off and on, but never really sat down and watched at length. I thought it was a decent concept, but never anything that really super appealed to me. But this season, oh good lord, this season is clever. Like, they have really gone above and beyond to, because, I mean, the whole thing about the show is pop culture kitsch. It's about the idea of kind of celebrating through, it's celebrating through nerdiness, your nerdiness. Like, your medium is action figures. Yeah. By which you celebrate what a nerd you are. So it's like the ultimate in nerddom. And I kind of enjoy it on that level. But in this season, they really do get very creative with what they do. One of my favorite things they do in this season was sort of this, like, where the G.I. Joes all realize that they're just, like, we are suffering under a cruel god. And, like, everything's going wrong. And then they kind of pull back and you realize it's every little boy who was, like, too rough with his G.I. Joes and, like, subjected them to torture. And, like, just like, we are the victims of a cruel god. I really like that. And there's a lot of little segments like that where it's like, man, they found a way to not just, like, point at something and go, hey, remember Thundercats. Instead, they're like, okay, well, let's do something more interesting with it and, like, have Patrick Stewart turn into a battle cat, even though he was a, like, little nebbish tourist and was accidentally transformed into Battle Cat when Battle Cat was destroyed. And, like, you know, like, they do a lot of really fun things like that. And I don't know, I just enjoyed the whole experience of watching the entirety of, especially their Christmas special on here, which is fantastic.
As well as they actually pack this with bonus
so
features.
So packed.
Yeah, I mean, a ton of deleted, like, 55 minutes of deleted scenes.
And for a show that only runs 15 minutes at a time?
Yeah, not like, even 15 minutes.
Yeah, so that's like having three extra episodes of deleted scenes.
51 minutes of behind-the-scenes featurettes.
Yeah.
a sketch-by-sketch video commentary segments, audio commentaries for every single episode, deleted animatics, I already said that. Deleted scenes, deleted channel flips. I mean, it's so much more than you would have to put on this sort of thing. So, yeah, it's no wonder you put it on your best of list.
Indeed.
You must really like He-Man.
I do. I do. I guess I'm more a fan of Adam. I think he's got great style.
Great haircut.
Great haircut. What are you going to do, man?
That haircut only works when it's on He-Man.
It really does. You ever see that on, like, you know why? Because the only human who has that haircut is Justin Bieber, and that just doesn't work at all.
Not at all. Well, I'm going to go on with my choice, which is, my first choice is The Legend of Korra.
Shocker!
Book one, Air.
Sorry to take the air out of your announcement, but I kind of knew that was coming.
You know, I'm just full hot air anyway. You can't use the same word twice in puns like that. It doesn't work.
No.
I would have to throw something with wind or gas or
something. Well, I was going to say, why don't you bend our ear on this, but, you know. Okay.
No.
All right.
This is believe it or not, an American animated series, because you watch it and you'd be like, isn't this like anime that's been like dubbed or something? Nope. This is made in America on Nickelodeon for Nickelodeon. There's a sequel to their series, Avatar The Last Airbender. Now, wait, don't go anywhere, because I know you might be thinking of that terrible live action movie they made that everyone in the world hates, and if you
Nothing to do with something.
Broken inside of you. That's an adaptation of it that was terrible. The original cartoon series was fantastic. I actually like The Legend of Korra a little bit more, and it's not just because I'm fans friends with Janet Varney, who voices the main character.
What is that? Is that a name? Those things are heavy. No wonder you keep dropping them.
I think I may have dropped it. This is a fun show, which looks like it has more money in it than the first season. The animations are just a little bit smoother. There's just there's a lot more action in some of these, and it all takes place in a much more complex environment inside of a city, as opposed to sort of traveling across the country. Originally, this was only conceived of as a 12 episode miniseries, but apparently it did well enough that they decided, fuck it, we're just gonna keep going and do more seasons of this. The new one, of course, has already started. I've not gotten a chance to watch it yet, but this is a beautiful looking series about the next airbender, the next sort of all-powerful superhuman teenager who's come along, whose job it is to unite all the various people who can affect the four elements. Except her whole problem is she's really good at it, except for the one element she's supposed to be masterful at from the start.
Huh.
Which is the exact opposite of the first airbender, who's like great at the one that he's the only one he can do, but really kind of is having a hard time with all the rest.
Right.
Yeah, but this works.
It's really good as one of these characters to be a mile wide and an inch deep with the things that you can bend.
True.
Just be like, fire, I can do a little fire, a little earth, you know, whatevs.
Yeah, when they bring Yuri Geller into an episode, he's the only guy who can bend the element of spoons. That's a whole element.
He'll come in handy.
Know that.
All those situations where they need that to happen.
He gets forked, though, so. This actually has audio commentaries for every single episode, 53 minutes of exclusive to the Blu-ray animatics, and a 6-minute sort of jokey Legend of the Puppet Bender featurette that has the cast and crew making fun of each other with puppet avatars of their characters.
Nice.
So, like a little cute extra, but, you know, whatever. I had a lot of fun with this. Really, really recommend it. Great story and a really terrific ending. Builds to a wonderful point that, you know, I admit made me tear up a little bit. I got a little verklempt.
Just a little bit. Talk amongst
just
yourself.
Just a little bit verklempt.
Well, right on, man. I think my next pick is going to be something we talked about very recently, and in fact, something we just gave away not too long ago, which is Futurama Volume 8. Now, this is sadly the end, well, for now, of Futurama. Like, we've heard that before about, you know, this is the end of Futurama until it comes back.
Until they bring it back again, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is an episode that plays a lot to some of our sensibilities, like making math jokes and making a lot of classic movie references. There's a great joke in here about one of the bartenders or one. No, it's a guy at a country western bar who handles like the bucking bronco, except it's a bucking bugalo. And the MC is one of the guys from THX 1138.
Huh.
And it's just like, well, that's a really obscure joke that I love. And of course, the first episode, scroll back up for a second. The first episode is called, or second episode is called 2D Blacktop. Which is
which right there, you know, you were gonna like.
Yeah, it was like it's a street racing episode, and it's a reference to Tulane Blacktop.
Yeah, it's a cross between making fun of Fast and the Furious, which really it's like hitting every single cliche from Fast and the
it
Furious
really is.
And having fun with it. And then of yeah, like of a famous math novel.
From oh, like yeah, yeah, Flatland.
The 60s, Flatland. You're like going, really? You
yeah.
crossed Flatland with Fast and the Furious? I think I love you.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they just, there's no end to how nerdy this show gets. And it does it in such a way that even if you don't understand the references, you don't really have to.
Yeah, I mean, it would make it that much funnier if you do.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, it's not like, hey, get it? You have to understand the original point it's referencing from to think it's funny. No,
yeah,
it's not definitely. Like that. And yeah, it's a good season. It's sad that it's ending, but like I said, Matt Groening keeps saying, it's not over!
It's not over! Nothing is over!
Audio commentaries on all the episodes, a compendium of the deleted scenes for 16 minutes, a set of featurettes, about the production called Futurama University. And then, of course, a look at the writer's room, which is always terrific because the writers are the people who, let's face it, they're the ones who make this shit happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
God loves writers.
I hope so. I really do, because I've done some bad shit.
Well, maybe not Aaron Kruger.
Well, yeah, fuck that guy.
All right, well, I'm going to go in some titles that came out this year that I thought they would never get around to putting out on Blu-ray, and that's Adventure Time. So pleased, and not only did they not put out one of those here's a weird assortment of episodes that aren't in the order that they were released that we selected because why the fuck not? This is, which I fucking, why is it only animated shows that do that shit? It drives me up the wall. Or like, hey, here's three episodes that had the same storyline or the same characters that we're releasing for $20. Fuck you. Put it out as a season.
Fuck you.
What are you doing? This is actually the first season and the second season, which you can buy separately as Blu-rays and cool looking Blu-rays. These episodes are just better watching in order. The way they made them, the way they were thinking when they wrote this completely insanely psychedelic and hallucinatory,
it's funny to
sort
try
of for children show.
To try and chart chronologically a stream of consciousness, but that's what watching these episodes in order really is.
Yeah, it kind of is. And the first two seasons are terrific. I mean, I can't even talk yet so much for the third and fourth because I've just seen sporadic episodes here and there. But these are much fun. You're going to want to own these. They're great. Like, I'm in a bad mood. Let's just watch two or three episodes of Adventure Time.
Hell yeah.
Bad mood gone.
Absolutely.
Just like that.
Algebraic!
It's just going to bring your inner child back out, assuming they were not kept in a Ukrainian prison, chained to the floor, eating gruel out of a bowl. I mean, that's your inner child.
That's oddly specific. Is there something you want to talk about, dude?
No, why would I want to talk about it?
Oh, no, nothing at all. Repressed.
No. My childhood was more filled with being force-fed psychedelic drugs in a Ukrainian prison,
oh, okay.
Chained to a floor with a bowl of magical rainbow unicorn food.
Well, there you go. You've got this show. You've already figured it out.
That's pretty much the show. It's got four, the first season's got four audio commentaries, 23 minutes of featurettes, 49 minutes of animatics, 6 minutes of what they call video extras, which are like a music video, a fan tribute compilation, and a bonus adventure, whereas the second season has a full season audio commentary. Creator Pendleton Ward and his storyboard artists all got together in their house and recorded a running commentary of all 26 episode seasons. Like, they just went like, we're just going to do it all the way straight through and not even take a break.
Pendleton Ward is a really cool guy, but he is weird as shit. Like, there was that featurette where you kind of tour his office with all the different animators, and there's just characters like popping up, and then he's like chasing them, and it's just like, what is happening right now?
He's a strange guy, which you should know. You don't need to see bonus features to figure that out.
No.
The second season also comes with the crew of Adventure Time interview with Pendleton Ward interviewing his own creative team, which is, as you might expect, not normal.
This helps you get back in touch with your inner child, provided your inner child is a wonderful little weirdo.
Yeah.
I love this show so much.
Yeah, this is like, there's different kinds of inner children and people. There's different kinds of children, really. You got those children who are like, my invisible friend, Harry, I had to tell him to leave. Why is that, honey? He said he was planning to kill Daddy tonight.
Boom!
That's one kind. That's not this kind of kid.
No.
Or there's not the kind that's like, I don't want to eat my food. It looks nasty like your face.
Yeah.
No, this is the one who you come in and has drawn a fantasy kingdom on the kitchen wall.
Yes.
This is that inner child.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And by the way, that first kid you mentioned, send that one to the Ukrainian prison.
Yeah, but that's
just to be sure.
That's your inner child, Brian.
No, absolutely.
That's totally your inner child.
Inner child, as if I'm not still that way.
Well, I don't believe you had a third pick, so I'm just going to go to mine, which I'm sure you can share with Archer Season 3.
Hell yes.
Still one of the funniest shows on television. Still clever and irreverent and rude and inappropriate. This show starring one of the greatest voice actors on TV today in terms of comedy, H. John Benjamin, never fails to bemuse the adults in the audience. Certainly not made for children, based on a secret agent who is not incompetent. Strangely, because he should be, because he's a raging alcoholic and one of the laziest people on the planet.
He's lazy, he's an alcoholic, he's a spoiled brat, and he's a womanizer.
But
and
he's also a pretty good secret agent when he sets his mind to it.
Reminds me of a certain British agent that's been traipsing through a franchise for 40 years.
And also has luck of the Irish, I swear to God.
It's yes.
Just like, but this is yet another great, it's hard for me to say what season's the best. They are all really good.
But man, this season, okay, so this season begins and ends with these really, third season. I'm trying to remember. Heart of Arch. Well, I'm getting
it. It starts with the third parter, Heart of Archness, which was released, which came out first, and then there was several months break, and then they went back into the regular season.
Right. Okay. I was actually thinking of season four. This one, I love the Heart of Archness opening. Like, all of his not understanding pirate culture as much as he thinks he does is hysterical.
But that being said, when they came back from the break with The Man from Jupiter, which starred Burt Reynolds, that's the single best episode of the show.
Oh my God, ever. My heart.
I watched that show four times in the week it came out.
Be still my happy little heart that all of a sudden Burt Reynolds shows up in our...
Burt Reynolds!
Oh my god! Burt Reynolds!
I can't hear you over the sound of my throbbing erection! So good.
Hilarious.
And yeah, this is filled with other really good episodes as well, including the great two-part season finale, Space Race, where they all end up on the International Space Station.
Bryan Cranston doing a voice.
Bryan Cranston, yeah. Just great. This is about as high quality as television animated comedy gets in this day and age. And I can hardly wait for season, 4 to come out on, I want it all now.
Oh yeah.
Just give it to me now.
Absolutely.
Give it to me, Brian. Give it to me now.
Well, I can't. If I could, I would have it for myself.
There are audio commentaries on 3 episodes. There is the opening 3, the Hearts of Archon is basically re-released as recut as 1-hour-long special if you feel like you need such a thing. It's a promo for the upcoming book, well, already out book, How to Archer, the Ultimate Guide in Espionage and Style, and also Cocktails Ever Written. I only know that because I have it.
Such a good book.
It's really funny. There's a Cooking with Archer, where all which is actually funny as shit, where with Alton Brown and Archer are making eggs Woodhouse, as well.
Because how hard is it to poach a goddamn egg properly?
As well as Archer making his own trailer for the sequel to Gator, the Burt Reynolds movie. I mean, this is one of the reasons that stuff was not in the episodes. Oh, if you watch it as air, you didn't get to see that shit. It's basically the accompaniment to the Burt Reynolds episode, and so perfect. And then a special message they had recorded for Comic-Con last year that they had done at the Archer panel. So yeah, this is a great set.
Absolutely. Oh. Well, it just makes me happy.
Now, there's one film that kind of stands alone this year in this category for TV movies. And there were other ones that possibly could have gone here, but none I felt that strongly about, except for there was just the one nominee that we both agreed on. This is the only one I would really give an award to on any level. And that was Game Change, which
Indeed.
Came out in 2012 on HBO, starring Julianne Moore as, I'm not sure if she's dumb or just her whole gig is playing it dumb. And Sarah Palin, you know, and it presents her in this weird sort of, like, it's sympathetic, but not at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
So on the one hand, she is thrust into a political scheme. I mean, she's basically used as a pawn from day one.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's like, you can't really blame her for that. But then, when she starts overstepping her bounds left and right and saying things she shouldn't and going places she shouldn't, and when people try and, like, tell her, like, you need to back off, that's when, like, her inner diva comes out, and it's like, no, I'm gonna make a speech, well, and I'm
that,
gonna...
Yeah, you feel bad for her when she's being manipulated, but when then she decides to fight back, and then you realize that, like, wow, she's more Machiavellian than the rest of them, just incompetently so. Mm-hmm. And she has no business being in the place where she is. It's just the state of Republican politics at that point that even allowed someone like her, a relatively simplistic person who never should have been in politics on any level.
A person who thinks dinosaurs and humans only live 2,000 years apart.
Yeah, it's just like, it's actually just become sad to watch. You're never really angry at her. You just feel sad because it's watching this person just... She's just kind of going crazy, really.
I think it's easier for me to have sympathy for her because they didn't win the election.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If they'd won the election, I would not feel sorry for her. But this also stars Woody Harrelson in a terrific role as one of the people who's sort of some, like, the campaign runner, basically, for her. And Ed Harris, who has, it's a small role, but playing John McCain, and he really just channels the shit out of John McCain in this thing.
Indeed.
Sarah Paulson, Ron Livingston, Brian D'Arcy, a lot of familiar faces in this thing, and it's actually really, really interesting.
It definitely is. I liked it quite a bit.
Well worth, even for you non-political types out there, just seeing Julianne Moore's pitch perfect impression. I mean, Tina Fey's got to work at it now. It's just like, wow, you outdid Tina Fey for
which
for
is funny because that becomes a plot point in the movie.
It does.
How mad Sarah Palin gets that Tina Fey is mocking her on SNL.
There's a special here, 7-minute special from the authors of the original book this is based on, as well as some other political commentator type folks talking about the demands of even being a presidential candidate, the sort of challenges of surviving a 24-hour news cycle, stuff like that. And then there's a 4-minute thing about, just adapting it into a television movie.
Right on.
But yeah, well worth a look for that one. Next up is the final chapter. The final chapter. The final chapter. Of our all I want for Geekma series. I know you're as relieved as we are.
We've literally covered everything you could possibly want for Geekma.
Yeah, we have said every word in the English language now more than once.
Oh, wait, wait, rhubarb. Okay, now we have. Now we have. That I just broke Chris. I broke him. He's dead. He collapsed over like a tin soldier. It's incredible to watch.
There's actually credits running in my head as my brain dies. Funny enough. I knew it would be that way too. Our last topic is animated films. And we're going to let Brian, which makes more sense here because you have three and I have two.
So I should start.
You should start.
I should start.
Yeah.
The first one I'm going to throw out there is the Roger Rabbit 25th Anniversary Edition. Which, this is one of my favorite animated films of all time, and just the way that they were able to blend animation with live action. And not only that, but blend a children's movie with a hard-boiled, like, noir. Like, this is a film about sex and murder and blackmail, and yet, you know, all of us love this movie as kids. Like, we're all like, woohoo, Roger Rabbit!
Well, because they managed to translate all those elements into a relatively harmless, you know, movie. It's one of those, like, a lot of it is insinuation that's going on and not actually showing it, so kids
and a lot of the dirtiest jokes in the movie are way over kids' heads. Like, I love the scene where Bob Hoskins is hired to take photographs of Jessica Rabbit, and you hear all this moaning and slapping and then you look at the photographs, and they literally are just playing patty cake. And that's such a...
It's about as dirty as a Tex Avery cartoon, which it's drawing heavily from.
Yeah, no, absolutely it is. But, I mean, this is just a phenomenal film. And Bob Hoskins, God love him. I'm so sad to hear that he's having health problems and isn't going to be acting anymore. Because the guy is just a force. Just a force.
Playing the private dick in question, the gumshoe.
Yeah.
Trying to help Roger Rabbit find out who's framing him.
Yeah, and just talk about a great cast here. I mean, Christopher Lloyd, obviously, and
Charles Fleischer doing the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Yeah,
Kathleen Turner. As you know, the one thing about Kathleen Turner, she may have grown jowls like a cartoon like bulldog,
droopy,
but when in her day, she was sexy, and she's always had one of those voices that's like so hot.
Will you call and just talk to me for a while?
It's a no-brainer for her to play Jessica Rabbit, who is probably the sexiest cartoon character who's ever.
I would have her call and read me the ingredients of Fruit Loops. I don't give a shit. Just talk to me for a while. And yeah, you'd see like other voices turn up too, like, Squiggy of Lenny and Squiggy turns up as one of the weasels.
I mean, even Mel Blanc. Is one of the last productions he was actually in before he died in 1989, comes in to do cameos of Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, Tweety, and Sylvester.
Well, that was the other amazing thing about this film is you had Disney characters, Looney Tunes characters, like all of these different worlds. Of course, now we live in the era where Disney's buying everything, so it's not quite as... But like at the time, it was like, whoa, these are completely different worlds.
They're not supposed to interact like this. This is so wrong. Great. I feel dirty.
And this Blu-ray, oh my God, did they go above and beyond. I mean, the picture quality is astounding on this transfer. And not only that, but they have thrown in more special features than we can really go over without this show dragging on for another hour. But one of the things I really like was that they put back the pig head sequence, which is this really sort of bizarre, bit of bad luck for Bob Hoskins' character, in which the weasels essentially put a cartoon head on top of his own head.
Hmm.
And then he has to go and like wash it off with turpentine. And in fact, in the movie, the scene where Jessica Rabbit shows up at his office and he's coming out of the bathroom, he was washing that pig head off. And they, like, it's just so weird to look at. Like, the way they animated it, it was just like, okay, this is a little unsettling. And I can understand why they cut it, but I love that it's back here. And there's, you know, you can see production footage, you know, like, what they were actually filming versus what the final product was. The rubber models, which is, it's really funny. They show like the little rubber Roger Rabbit that they would like drag around on set. So, that Bob Hoskins knew exactly where to look and
right, what the mark was.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's even, there's Roger Rabbit shorts on here, which are fantastic and were attached to other subsequent Disney movies.
They're so good.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids had one. I think one of the movies that had one was,
God, I don't remember where
it was. Some weird Jodie Foster movie, like, Here and Now, or Now and Then.
Really? Was that one of them?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact name of the movie, but it was like, it was one of those ones you hear and you go, Far and Away. It was Far and Away. It wasn't Jodie Foster. It was Reese Witherspoon. It was Far and Away. That was one of the ones that had one of the Roger Rabbit shorts attached to it, oddly enough. But yeah, just a really great package altogether from one of...
Dick Tracy was one of the others.
Dick Tracy was one of the other ones. Yeah. Absolutely. A Far Off Place, not Far and Away. God damn it. A Far Off Place, Dick Tracy, and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. all had, you know, these Roger Rabbit shorts attached to them. And this is really one of the greatest films that Amblin has ever put out.
Oh, I agree.
And I love this movie so much. It was a big part of my childhood, and I found so many new things to love about it as an adult, and I think this release kind of celebrates all of those things.
I love that they're still talking about the possibility of a sequel, because this is one of those films I wouldn't even blank about the idea of them making a sequel. I'd be like, yeah, do it.
I'd see it.
Yeah, totally do it.
Sure.
Do it. No, seriously, do it.
Do it. Do it.
No, no, do it.
Do it.
Just saying. All right. I'm going to move to something considerably more serious. I know we're talking about animated films.
But oh, what are you God.
Do? I know. I'm sorry. I got to bring the whole thing down. And once again, back to France.
God damn it.
They just had a good year.
Sacre bleu. Sacre Blu-ray.
Hey, Brian.
What?
Voulez-vous coucher?
Stop. Just because it's the only French you know doesn't mean you get to keep saying that to me.
Donde está el baño?
The banjo is in the closet. What else do you want to know?
Mon crayon est large. Dijon.
Good. Good job. Dijon. Dijon.
I know that one of those things was not in French, but fuck off.
One of those things means mustard.
One of these things is not like the other because Chris is an idiot.
Your words, man.
this film is called The Painting, a 2011 French animated film that, quite frankly, blew me out of my seat. This was, if I had seen it the year this came out, this definitely would have been my best of the year animated. I don't care what would have been up against it, not knowing off the top of my head, but seriously, I don't care. This movie blew me away with a bunch of characters who live in a painting where the characters in an unfinished painting, where it's ruled, it has a hierarchy, where the characters who are completely finished are the royalty, and they live like kings, and the characters who are halfway finished are treated basically like servants and slaves, barely worthy of recognition, but they're allowed to work in and around the village and the castle, and then the characters who are just sketches are, you know, to be killed on sight, basically. They're hunted for game.
Wow.
When a character is fully painted and a character that's half painted fall in love with each other, there's a voyage ends up being involved where they go outside of the painting itself and find themselves in the studio of the artist that was painting it, filled with other paintings. And the whole thing turns into this really in-depth spiritual examination of existence and philosophy and why are we here and what does it all mean in a almost sort of like in an optimistically existentialist sort of way.
Mm.
Fascinating, with a huge amount of different animation styles that are just absolutely gorgeous. I cannot recommend this film enough. It really is a startling intellectual and artistic triumph of a film. Please go check this thing out. It's, yeah, there's really nothing else like it. I was so moved at the end of this. I had to like just be by myself for like an hour afterwards while I thought about it.
I'm still trying to think of like a blend between existentialism and joyful things. Like,
yeah, it's hard to.
It's like Albert Camusing or something.
No, not even then, really.
No.
No. Mm. Unless you're talking about the song by The Cure about the stranger, which is a pretty good song, but you know, it makes me happy.
Yeah, there you go.
Killing an Arab is the name of the song in question. That's what the song's called.
No, I'm sure it is. It's just like a weird, like, yeah, that song. It's, you know, existential. Makes me happy. It's called Killing an Arab.
Well, it's a poppy song. You know, a lot of times I listen to songs, I don't even know what they're about. I know, I'm like, I don't care. It's just a fun song. And later you find out it's like, oh man, it turned out later that guy like killed and ate his own children. That's what the song was about that you love so much, you monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one's about killing an Arab. I'm sorry about that, but still. Camus wrote it. What do you want? It's got a 32-minute making of, the original trailer and a slideshow of a lot of the art. And from here, I really beg you guys to check this one out. I think you're going to love it.
Nice. Right on. Well, my next one is Rise of the Guardians, which was a film that I believe was released technically in 2012, but we reviewed the Blu-ray earlier this year.
Yeah, barely made it. March 12th is when it came out.
Yep. Now, Rise of the Guardians was sort of the big animated Christmas movie last year, and again, I was not expecting much from it just because it looked very silly. But we get in there and what we have is sort of like the Avengers of, you know, children's myths. We have like True. Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the Sandman and the Tooth Fairy, all kind of.
The Boogeyman.
Like all these characters who are kind of brought to the same place. The Boogeyman being the villain, ably voiced by Jude Law. I thought Jude Law is, the character's name is Pitch Black. But, so you have all these characters from children's myths who are brought together to fight, evil and to mix
their powers and abilities.
Yeah.
And to come together and learn to work as a team.
They are assembled to defeat a growing threat. And I just thought, One of the things that really won me over about this movie, and part of it was the voice acting. Alec Baldwin as this weird sort of like Russian, like old world Russian Santa was incredible.
Such a great choice to a way to build that character.
Definitely. You know? And then you had Hugh Jackman as the Easter Bunny, and I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, where he's kind of like if Wolverine was the Easter Bunny.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And all of this, what really won me over about this movie altogether, though, were the action sequences that were just, like, dazzling.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't believe how spectacular they
were. One roller coaster ride after another, whereas most animation films have two, maybe three. This one just keeps going.
Yeah.
And, like, just intensely drawn and rendered CG, like, and things that would have your stomach doing, like, you know, jumping around.
Yeah.
Like as if you were on a roller coaster that would not stop.
Like you're on a roller coaster with the Easter Bunny.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was one of the things. It's like, another thing that is, they made all these really cutesy-looking characters into total badasses when they needed to be.
Yeah.
The Sandman, like this, like little, he looks like a little son. Like, he looks like the son from the Raisin Bran box.
Yeah.
Like, do-do-do-do-do. And then when he gets in battle, it's like, do not fuck with the Sandman.
Well, just weird little things like Santa's absolutely covered with tattoos.
Yes.
Things like that. It's just a good time. It's a fun movie that does a lot of stuff you wouldn't expect it to do.
And with it being the holidays, I thought, yeah, why not give that a revisit if you haven't already?
Well done. Of course, this is, as most animated films, it comes with a lot of Blu-ray stuff, including games for the kids to play with the, involving the characters that you can use with your remote, a four-part making-of documentary, a chat with the original author, William Joyce, of the book it's based on, The Guardians of Childhood, a piece looking at the people who all did the voices, a interactive dream interpreter, don't ask me, I don't make this stuff, filmmaker commentary, and, of course, a bunch of shit just promoting other DreamWorks shit.
Yep.
Well, my next pick is Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox.
Nice.
I know I'm going to get shit from this from some people because some of the comic and animation fans out there fucking hated this.
I really dug this.
I can't figure it out because I thought this is one of the best I've seen from DC's animated universe home release segment now that they're just doing the home release DVDs. This is based on the Geoff Johns and Andy Kubert run, one of those mega epic all year long series they were doing where the Flash was kind of the main character in it. It wasn't terribly well received in the comics. And I think we've all got what they call event fatigue. We're just kind of sick of all our comics being taken over by whatever the editors decide the major event's going to be. But the thing about the story is when you boil it down to just the base stuff that was going on it and the main storyline, it's a really cool storyline.
Agreed.
Here, Barry Allen, who is the Flash, ends up basically, it's insinuated to him by one of his rogues gallery, one of his villains, that there's something weird about his mother not being there, even though his mother's been dead for a long time. But when he goes to bed afterwards and wakes up the next day, he discovers the entire world has changed. He has no powers. His mom is alive. His wife, Iris, is married to somebody else completely. And there's no Justice League. Aquaman and Wonder Woman have been at war with each other, with the Atlanteans versus the Amazonians forever. And they're destroying Europe by doing it. Cyborg is kind of like the version of Superman in this world, because Superman at least doesn't appear to exist for a while. Batman is more of a Punisher type
character. Well, and it's Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, and it turns out to be Thomas Wayne. There's all these great alternate universe elements here that actually really work with a terrific voice cast going on here. Some villains are heroes in this world. Some heroes are villains. It's just a lot of fun to come together. And, you know, with not having to spend all year reading it and having it take over all your different comics and stuff, it's a lot more fun than it would be that way, I suspect. And a lot shorter, certainly.
Yeah.
Really terrific animation as well. I just thought this was great. I enjoyed this immensely. I always have fun with time travel anyway, and this is, if you do too, this is well worth your time. Get it? Time, huh? Worst pun I've ever made.
Yeah.
It's got audio commentary by the director.
Is that what makes you tick, time puns? I should clock you.
Jesus Christ.
And the pendulum swings the other way.
Don't you lay your hands on me.
In your face.
Oh, there's too many clock possible puns.
Sorry, I didn't mean to wind you up. What were you saying?
Let me just watch this real quick.
We're terrible people, you realize, right?
Oh, well, yeah.
Okay.
I have a certificate. from God.
I just have this decoder ring I found in a cereal box, but I'm pretty sure it if you decode the message, it says you're terrible.
I'm pretty sure it does too. Commentary by the producer, director, screenwriter, and original comic book writer. A 22-minute look at the history of time travel in the Flash universe, basically taking a look at the comics. A little dry, but still cool stuff. A second documentary that takes a look at the Rogues Gallery, all the bad guys, who are one of the reasons people love the Flash. He's got weird, kind of incompetent, but funny bad guys. A sneak peek at the upcoming Justice League War. You always want to know what the new what every new DC Universe movie is, because they're like, it's like one out of every five is not worth watching, and the rest are great.
Yeah.
And then a look, of course, as he's always have, is collecting animated television episodes from DC Universe past, that are really good and have something to do with the subject matter at hand. Here, Requiem for a Scarlet Speeder from Batman the Brave and the Bold, and Flash and Substance from Justice League Season 2, and Legends Parts 1 and 2 from Justice League Unlimited. Absolutely great. Yeah, solid package like DC Universe always does for these, and one of their better recent films.
All right. Well, we're going to close out the show, and effectively all of All I Want for Geekmas, with Wreck-It Ralph! Oh, how can you not love Wreck-It Ralph? Ding. I love it. This is one of those, okay, so Wreck-It Ralph is a movie that is not only amazingly animated and so charming, but plays to my specific love of classic video games. And, you know, just seeing these characters kind of exist all in the same world made me so over the top happy. I'm trying to figure out if I should one-up you, or if I should just let this die.
Sorry.
What were we doing? Oh, yeah, Wreck-It.
That damn song. It's like with Cartman with Come Sail Away. It's like the moment we start hearing the theme from Mario Bros., you just got to do the whole thing.
If somebody just goes, dude, and then stops, you're inevitably going to go, God damn you. But yeah, Wreck-It
Ralph. It's not as bad as dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Oh, God. Now that's going to be stuck in there for days. Thank you very much. It's a movie about a character in a game who is, he's the bad guy of the game. He's the Donkey Kong of Donkey Kong. You know what I mean? He's the guy that you're always trying to defeat in the game, but he lives within the world of the game and is like tired of being an outcast just because he's cast as the villain. So he decides to go off and try and be a hero in another game. Well, the problem is that he lives in a game that was created in the 80s and is far less advanced than some of the scary, like, Halo or Gears of War type games that he stumbles into. And it's just, it's fun watching, you know, he's voiced by John C. Reilly and just kind of this big lug who's lovable even at it, like, even as he's trying to be the most aggressively mean, you're still just like, oh, Ralph.
You're so sweet.
I love you. And then, of course, seeing all of the classic video game characters like M. Bison and the ghosts from Pac-Man and Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, like, Dig Dug, the list goes on and on.
The bartender from Tapper.
Yeah, come on, man. That's a great fucking reference.
Street Fighter characters.
And they play with the world, like, they do for the world of video games kind of what, I was trying to think, like, you know, these Pixar movies, that's kind of what they do, is they take something that you think is just inanimate object and give it an entire world to live in.
They do what Shrek did for, like, fairy tale characters, yeah. Really, where it's like kind of taking that same idea where it's the guy who's ostensibly the villain that's kind of like, you know, breaks out of that world and finds a new existence outside of the previous definition he always had of himself. And they're helped by a really able cast here, including Sarah Silverman, who plays a sort of like, you know, in a Mario Kart racing type game, yeah. But even cuter, if you would picture.
Like a cutesy version of Mario Kart. Well,
it's already cutesy. Imagine more cutesy.
Yeah.
Who's a glitch, like a character that was deleted from the game that befriends him because they're both flawed.
Yeah.
Jack McBrayer, who of course is the intern on 30 Rock.
Yeah, Kenneth.
Yeah, who's
fixing. He's the hero of the game that Ralph lives in.
Yeah, exactly. Jane Lynch is in this. Alan Tudyk. Gotta love Alan Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk doing a great Edwin impression.
Man, that guy, yeah, he's like a leaf on the wind.
Oh my goodness! What a terrible pun!
Only a few people even get that. And I can't explain it to the others. Mindy Kaling, Joe Latruglio, who recently has started to really impress me from his Brooklyn Nine-Nine role. Adam Carolla, Dennis Haysbirth, Ed O'Neill, Horatio Sanz, who's not dead yet, miraculously. Am I wrong here?
Despite recent accounts, is not actually dead. And the recent account is Chris saying that he thought he was dead.
I'm just saying, the man lives a bit of an unhealthy life.
Well, as we all do.
He's been on everybody's, what do you call those?
Death clocks?
Whatever you call them. When you have the gambling game where you pick what's going to die next.
Yeah.
Deadpool.
Deadpool.
Yeah. He's been on everybody's Deadpool for like 10 years. You're like, dude, we don't want you to die, but I don't know what to tell you. You're kind of forcing my hand here. this comes, of course, once again, like all animated films do these days, with lots of extra features, including a Paper Man theatrical short that was nominated for an Academy Award that tells the story of a man and a woman bound by fate in a few dozen paper airplanes. A look for 17 minutes at creating the worlds of it, the look at the effects on it, 14 minutes of alternate and deleted scenes, 3 minutes of video game commercials that were done for this, and Fix It Felix Jr.'s Sugar Rush, Heroes Duty, and Fix It Felix Hammer.
Heroes Duty.
It's got the Disney intermission thing. When you pause it, Chris Hardwick from The Nerdist appears and discusses in-jokes and references.
Because as we've said before, they're just going to keep forcing that guy down our throats. You will love me!
I like Chris Hardwick, I do. But
no, I do too.
And but I hand it to the guy. He went from the guy who used to be the host of Singled Out to like the mega nerd who now must approve of all other nerd activities for it to pass muster.
Right.
You know, you're like, hey man, you went from 0 to 60 fast and you brought all your friends with you, so got to hand it to you there. Yeah, I like to picture that happening to me and then taking all you little schmucks along.
God
for the ride.
Damn it. God, you know what? You run the back end of the fucking side for a day then, because I hate that shit.
I can't blame you.
Flipping the computer over. But yeah, Wreck-It Ralph's just a really sweet movie. And you know what's funny is that it felt like a Pixar film, even though technically it was... I know that a lot of people are like, you know, there's no real difference. There was for a while. For a very long time, there was a huge difference between Pixar and Disney.
John Lasseter ran Pixar, and other people were running, like, they kept switching out, running the Disney animation department. But as of, I think, the Princess Frog, John Lasseter took over both departments, and since then, the differences have been growing smaller and smaller.
They really have, but I mean, this just, like... This was just trademark, you know, Pixar stuff, like turning something that you don't, like, you know, like what they did for toys, what they did for robots, you know, what they did for cars. It's like you take something sort of innocuous and inanimate in your everyday life and give it an entire world to play in and make that world engrossing. And that's exactly what they do with Wreck-It Ralph.
You are absolutely correct. A lot of fun and a fitting end to All I Want for Geekmas, since we just wrecked it, yo.
We did. We wrecked it all up in this shit, and don't even bother trying to fix it. Because it ain't gonna happen.
Is that what people say? I don't know. As black as I get.
I'm not hip to the kids lingo these days.
No idea.
Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. I hope we gave you some good ideas for things to get for other people or things to just buy yourselves. And no matter who you're buying for, please remember to use our Amazon links to make those purchases and get to Amazon. No matter what you buy, as long as you get there from our link, you'll be supporting the site, and we appreciate it. We really hope you have a happy holidays, no matter what you celebrate. And, hey, if you need something to watch, go ahead and buy our Die Hard commentary.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
A scant $1.99, and we have a lot of fun just watching that movie and drinking eggnog, and a holiday tradition if there ever was one.
Yep, with a group.
With a group.
As you should watch it with a group.
You totally should watch it with a group. And then, again, it's $1.99.
And then people are like, where'd you get this from? You're like, oh, from this great site, oneofus.net. Apparently, they've got other commentaries, too.
Yes, and we also sell shit in our store. We have shirts. We have shirts.
Shirts. We got shirts.
Shirts. Lots of great stuff, lots of ways to show your membership into Us Nation and let everybody know about the site. We appreciate that. And like I said, we want to wish you a happy holiday. This has been, it's been kind of a challenging year, all things being equal, but one that's yielded something pretty incredible and an experiment that I'm really happy to have been a part of.
Agreed.
Yay, Smaltzy and Sappy.
Merry Christmas to all of us. And a happy new year.
And Cthulhu bless us, everyone.
Gesundheit.